It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I like Ezzy's tail comes into the shot, looks like the Kraken's tentacle or something. I realized something today that I don't know about you that's surprising that I don't know about you. What's your name? No. Do you have contacts or glasses?
I have glasses.
You do have glasses. For nearsighted or farsighted?
I was nearsighted, so the first glasses I got was like fifth grade or something. I couldn't see far away. I could read just fine. But now I need both. And the last time I had my eyes examined, I got two pairs of glasses. I got some for reading and I got some for seeing far away, for like driving and stuff. But I barely have worn them. So I think
probably coming on 2 decades, I do not believe I've ever seen you in a pair of glasses.
It's possible you haven't. Yeah. I mean, like, but between me leaving Applied Systems and us doing the podcast, I think there was a couple of years there where I probably wore glasses fairly frequently, but I didn't see you a lot in that time period.
Because you needed new glasses.
So I think I'm going to go ahead and do the whole bifocals thing next time around.
Okay.
And just try to find some frames that I'll actually wear, because it's just a big waste of money to buy glasses and not wear them.
Bifocals are good. Not having had it myself. I plan. Have I told this story already? To get a very fine like librarian chain for my glasses. Mm. Because when you are nearsighted and you get older and you need readers, it's only for your corrected vision. So like right now, if I was trying to look at something close, it would be blurry. Now I wouldn't have that problem.
Mm.
Now I'm super blind more than a few inches away. But so in theory, if I have a chain and I want to read something, I can just do that, read it. And that's what I've been doing now. If I'm reading something, I often now do the whole, like an old person. But I was torn because, I mean, some people just wear contacts all the time, and that makes sense. But I was torn. I was like, either he has glasses and I've never seen him in them, which seems really unlikely, or he's a person in his 50s who's never had glasses, which also seems very unlikely. They exist, but I don't know many of them.
I mean, prescription when I first had them, like I said, grade school, was really weak. Like they really liked to take my glasses off and put them on themselves, you know, or pick them up off the desk and put them on. And they'd say, is there a prescription here? I think it was mostly the reason they went ahead and gave me a prescription so early was because I've always had motion sickness problems and headaches. So I think they thought that would alleviate a little bit of that, which maybe it did. I don't know. And so in high school, like if you look at my yearbooks, I mean, I think some of my school pictures, I have glasses, some of them I don't, because again,
well, that's the problem. I've never looked at your yearbooks. I really should catch up on that.
So for most of my life, I mean, I've had times where I wore glasses a lot, like every single day for like years at a time. And then I would change my, I'd get a new pair and I wouldn't like them so much. And I wouldn't wear glasses for a long time. I'm kind of surprised you've never seen me in glasses, because I did wear that one, the pair before this one, I did wear a lot
because they were frameless. You a lot, so
I don't remember ever wearing them to your house. So by the time we were podcasting, I probably wasn't wearing them anymore, but I wore those.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this then. This dovetails nicely into what I wanted to talk about anyway. Do you know? I want to talk about this. I'm not even comfortable saying it. And the whole story is about how ridiculous this is. Are you familiar with Asian fit glasses frames?
No. What does that even mean?
Because you're a good person. So.
I don't even know
my wife and I both have terrible eyes. And my wife especially now has like, at a certain point, she had like three different kinds of glasses. So we also have really bad astigmatisms and all sorts of things. Mm. And so my wife and we both have diabetes. So we are supposed to, and we do go in annually for eye exams. And in fact, for a diabetic eye exam, which has other things involved. But so she recently went, well, I say recently, a month or two ago, I don't know. And she needs new glasses. But the timing was such that she's like, I'm not going to do it now. I'll come back another time. Fine. Great. So we finally got around to it the other night, because mostly the eye doctor is open during business hours, but there is one day a week they're open late, and we finally timed it. And I was like, let's go after work and we'll do this. And she wanted me with her to, because like, you can't, I find that really hilarious. And there's no way around it that I know of, but when you're trying on frames, by definition, you can't see how you look, so it's kind of tricky. But so she wanted me there for that, and anyway, we're picking this out, and I'm sitting off to the side and she's over. They always have these little desks in amongst the thing, and then the lady sits there, and I say lady, it's always been a lady when I'm saying whatever. She's doing all this, and she says to the lady, what does it mean when it says, and I didn't hear what it was on the label on the glasses, and the woman looks a little uncomfortable and says, yeah, a lot of companies are changing it and not using that term anymore. And I said, sorry, what term? And she said, Asian fit. And I'm like, the fuck you say? It is at this point that I should also specify the woman in question, Asian.
Hmm.
And I didn't actually swear at her, but I was like, oh my God. And she said, yeah, apparently, my butthole clenches up every time I start to say the sentence. I'm just not have Asian fit means a narrower bridge of the nose, because some people have a narrower bridge and it fits better. And it is a common thing in Asia. Apparently. Now, does this mean it is true for all Asians? No, not even close. Does it mean, I mean, obviously, does it mean that there are non-Asians that have that same sort of narrative? Of course. And I'm just in the year of our Jesus 2003 and 20 or whatever, how is this a thing? Like, all I could say at the time is I'm like, thank God it's not called Oriental fit, but still.
Mm.
Like, I don't. Oh. Huh. Like, how old? Please. Oh, yeah, whatever. You're being weird. She's off her hunger strike. I don't know what her problem is. Anyway.
Mm.
How is that? What? No. I'm just really disturbed by this, and I want to know how old it is. I haven't looked into this at all, but I'm very bothered.
I would just about guess that it started with a spectacle manufacturer who made a line of glasses that fit different, and only was shipping them to Asian countries for a very long time. completely ignoring the fact that there might be people over there, plenty, who didn't, you know, who needed a larger bridge, and plenty of people over here needed a smaller one. But that's probably just how it started.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Somebody probably viewed it as a metric versus imperial kind of thing.
Yeah, probably.
But I'm like, probably. It's not even... okay, this would not excuse it by any means. It's awful. There's no version that's awful. But it would be more understandable, in my opinion, if it was a combination of factors. This is literally just a narrow bridge. The term narrow bridge, or even narrow fit, like, is sitting there, is exactly the same length.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow. And
yeah,
it's just so late in the game for, because it's not like we walked in and we're like, do you have any of those Asian fit ones? We fucking hate those. Trish saw it in the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how?
You know,
I mean, like the real answer is, it's such an uncommon thing that nobody cares enough to really like get mad. And also, well, actually, this isn't as true, though, but almost every single eyeglass manufacturer is actually owned by the same company. It's a serious scam. But I am pleased to say that my particular eye doctor does not work with that company with frames at all, and never has. They apparently do have to work with certain things involving lenses, because certain companies are like the only ones that will do a certain thing with lenses. So they have to, but otherwise they don't, which I didn't know there were enough options that you could do that, but I was very happy to learn that. So
yeah.
Anyway, the world still sucks. Hello everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that, Asian fit glasses notwithstanding, is the sole reason why we cannot have nice things. And we're not even sorry. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 639.
Guess what?
I couldn't guess in a million years.
I figured out what I'm getting you for, do we call it graduation? For when you get your degree. I figured out your congratulations on your degree gift.
Oh,
even though it's like over a year away or whatever. But
yeah, it is over a
year. I'm excited. I wasn't like sitting around thinking, what am I going to do? Inspiration struck hard, and I'm very excited.
Okay. Well, I mean, you don't have to do anything, but that's nice.
I know, but I'm going to, and it's going to rock your world.
Oh,
assuming
good.
I can remember long enough, because I have not written it down. I have, however, already told two people, one of whom I live with, so that will hopefully help.
Yeah, like
for those of you, just
a year and a week away.
What?
Like, my graduation is a year and a week away.
Like, specifically, dang.
Yeah, like
specifically. I should put a note on my calendar. All right. So, for those of you just joining us. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And all the great people, all the ones you've ever heard of it throughout history, and the future, why not? Write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. And the hat magically forwards a email. And we read them. We talk about them. That's pretty much it. Well, it appears that summer heat may have finally started. Although summer humidity has not.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that too. Not that bad.
But the heat is bad enough that now we have closed up the house again. We had it open for quite a while. But as of yesterday, I've closed it up again. How has your week been?
Well, so most of my schoolwork, well, pretty much all of it was done before the week started. So I had some articles and things I didn't get to read during the course of the, I mean, I didn't need to read them for any assignment or anything, but I wanted to read them. So I kind of had them all.
Nerd.
I had a backlog of stuff I wanted to read. So I decided, well, you know, this is technically a school week. And so instead of like just taking it easy, I will just read like a regular school week and try to catch up, which I have mostly done. And I'm happy to have done that because these were really good and important articles for me to read. And hopefully I'll be talking to some of my classmates about some of it, not this week, but I don't mind talking about them during the break. I just know I need a break from reading them for, you know, even if I like it, it doesn't matter. I need a break.
We've talked about unplugged. This.
Yeah. So.
And you know what this all means again? We're coming up to another episode of Behind the Pancakes. Get your donations right in now if you want that recording.
Right. I forgot.
Probably coming up. Yeah, well, it still might involve pancakes. I thought of a possibly different place for us to go than IHOP, but we'll talk about that later. Okay. And so now you have 3 weeks off?
After this one is three weeks.
Yeah. 3 weeks off. And then only one term of coursework left.
Of the kind I've been doing, the practicum might have some reading and a paper or something maybe, but it's not going to be like
not a class.
So it's right. So yes, only one more quarter. So it's just two more classes. It's going to be one of the classes is on child and adolescent counseling, which I really look forward to that. And the other one is about, maybe I already said this, it's about evaluating programs. When you get a master's degree in counseling, you can do pretty much like you can, once you have a full license and you're not under supervision anymore.
You can send kids to war.
You can supervise. I'm saying you can supervise other, you don't have to have a PhD to supervise another counselor. You can do forensic psychology and testify in court. You can evaluate someone's program. I mean, the only thing you can't do is teach graduate students. You can teach undergraduate students. So,
this is a course on how to do that crap.
No, this course will be specifically be on how to evaluate someone else's program.
Oh, okay.
Because you might do that. I mean, not within 3 years of graduating, I won't do that. Well, except maybe my own program, I might evaluate it, you know, which I think is
good. Well, I think it's okay. Okay, good. I want to tell you some things.
No, you know, like what kinds of things you can put in place to measure as you go, you know, and what kinds of ethical concerns there might be if you're going to do that. Like, do you need to let clients know ahead of time, hey, you know, this is, we're going to be evaluating this as part of a whole program. So as you're giving informed consent to get counseling, we'd also like you to give informed consent to be sort of part of this kind of a study. It's not going to be published, but you're going to be part of evaluation of our program, and then they can say yes or no.
I don't think I can look at you. You're perfectly clear and I can hear you perfectly clear, but for reasons I do not remotely understand, there's like a quarter second delay between the audio and the visual. So it kind of looks like you're a badly dubbed movie.
I get that a lot.
Yeah.
I've got that my whole life. It's just uncanny. That's why people don't like to hang out with me.
Do you know where you are doing your practicum?
Yeah. It's a office in Cedar Rapids.
Is it who you were hoping to do your practicum with?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good. We haven't discussed it since things were still very up in the air. So.
Oh.
But we also didn't discuss it on the air. It's not something we necessarily need to talk about right now, but I was just curious.
No. Yeah. Everything worked out fine. Good. Everything's good. It starts in October. Everything's going to be great.
Sweet. Okay. Other than reading boring shit that nobody's making you read, how's your week been? Did you watch any movies that have grossed nine figures recently that you forgot to mention? Because that happens sometimes. Twice last week.
We are watching Crowded House with Tom Holland, and he's producing it too.
I haven't even heard of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not that impressed with it. I mean, if you like Tom Holland, I suppose you'll like it. And
I do like Tom Holland, but to be fair, I've seen Uncharted, So it's not always true.
Okay.
So that was bullshit.
I'm not much into it, the show. But that's really the only new thing as far as I know. Oh.
I was really into the band. Crowded House.
So Abby downloaded Witcher 3 and she's kind of started to play it a little bit.
Has she never played Witcher 3?
No.
Oh, God. No. Well, I mean, be prepared to start earning the income because she's going to lose her job.
Why do you say
that? That thing will suck you in whole.
Oh, well, I mean, it is interesting so far.
That being said, I never finished it, but, you know.
It's also weirdly old looking. It's not old, but it just...
Really?
I don't know. I mean, you know, you play a couple PS5 games that are made for the PS5 and you go to a game that was clearly made for the PS4, I guess, huh? It's not that old.
Yeah. Not that old, but it's not super new.
I mean, the cutscenes look good, but the gameplay is not like the cutscenes really. And it's just...
AAA games have really worked at... AAA games are obsessed with getting the graphics as good as they can get, and that has a lot of really terrible ramifications. But one of the other ramifications is if you wait a few years, there's a surprisingly big leap.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure a couple of years ago we wouldn't even have noticed, but now we do. So that's kind of interesting. But it's what I'm taken with right away is I didn't really know anything about how the characters were portrayed in the games, and the main character seems quite a bit like the TV show, more than I expected. That I didn't think they'd be similar really that much at all, but they're very similar.
They did very surprisingly good, which is weird to say because in theory the video games and the TV show have nothing to do with each other.
Sure.
In some very deliberate ways that the author will spend hours telling you about. But Henry Cavill was a huge fan of the games.
Well, that makes sense. I mean,
Henry Cavill famously was playing Witcher 2 when he got the call that he was going to be Superman. Henry Cavill is a gamer nerd. This has always been a thing.
Well, then why did he quit? Why did he quit the show?
I believe he quit because a bunch of new Superman shit was going to happen. Remember, he showed up at the end of Black Adam and all that?
Yeah, I guess.
And then surprise! And, yeah, well, it depends because I don't track this stuff anymore, but whispers still come to me. On some deep spiritual level, I'm still connected to pop culture in ways that I can't avoid. But there's also the argument that apparently it's fucking rough. Like, because he does a lot of the stunt work and everything, and it's just pretty intense to do.
Sure.
And so but I think it was mostly because he was planning to do some supermaning, and not so much now.
Well, I mean, the character in the game is like, this is almost exactly like what's on the screen, which not only did I find that unexpected, but I also weirdly found it kind of nice in a way. Like, I don't know. I liked it.
I mean, that's part of the appeal for me of the show is I'm like, it's just like the guy from the video game.
Yeah. I mean, other characters are not, but. Right. I wouldn't call myself like a Witcher fan or anything, but it was like, so it was weirdly fun that this game character was pretty much exactly like what we'd seen in the TV show. So,
speaking of such, have you seen the trailer for the third season?
Yeah, I think I have. I don't remember.
It looks really cool. I'm very excited. However, the one thing, like in the midst, like all of my excitement was overshadowed by the fact that Yaskier looks dumb as shit. Yaskier has some weird ass page boy haircut and real heavy eye makeup and basically looks like somebody doing like Tim Minchin goth cosplay. He looks really stupid. And it's the same actor, and I love him, and I love that character more than a lot of people do. He looks dumb as shit, and it's very distracting.
I didn't really notice. But I mean, wait. is, does it just look like that in the front, but in the back he's got it tied up? That's longer or something?
I do not recall seeing the back of his head in that trailer.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you're right. Maybe it's just cut like a bob cut type thing. I guess you're right.
He had short hair, but now he's got this weird this thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even
notice. And again, the very sort of shadowed eye makeup in a way. But
I didn't notice that at all. But the hair I did notice, but I guess I didn't think about it. Hmm.
You don't think about hair like I think about hair.
I have thought the show so far has gone, you know, pretty well. It's entertaining to watch.
Quite pleased with the show. The whole thing I ran into this in the games too is the world is so detailed and that's great. The world sucks shit and that's not great. And this is a constant struggle I have. The world of The Witcher is a shitty, nasty, incredibly misogynist world. And it is brought to life in such amazing fantastical detail, which is neat, but the substance is very not neat. Also, I am not a fan of the character of Geralt of Rivia for the most part. I consider him very much a super masculine self-insert character. He feels like the anti-Distaff Mary Sue in a way that I find. He very much, I don't know what it is with macho self-insert characters and long white hair, but he reminds me very much of Drizzt Do'Urden from Forgotten Realms, which is the same thing. Like, and he's so badass and girls like him a lot. He's in love with this one and she's super pretty, but other girls like him too. Like,
yeah, I hear what you're saying. How was your week?
Oh, let's find out.
Oh yeah, you're keeping notes. We've got a Hunt a Killer thing lined up, boy. We are ready to go.
Oh, Jesus. I got a lot of stuff to talk about. All right. Frames is gone.
Check that one off.
I did check that one off. Okay. Saw a movie, I think, is interesting. We're talking about a bit.
Okay. Let's do that.
It's one. The movie is called How to Talk to Girls at Parties.
Okay.
I believe it is available on Max currently. It is a few years old. Not super old, but a few years, I think. Maybe not. Maybe it's fairly recent. I don't know. But somewhere within the last 4 or 5 years. And it is based on a Neil Gaiman short story of the same name.
Mm.
And this is a short story of which I am quite a fan. And so I was quite excited. I thought it was a very sort of indie, lesser known thing, but it has some big names in it. Elle Fanning is one of the leads. Nicole Kidman plays a pretty big part in it. And I'm trying to think some of it, but there's some big names. And especially, you know, British actors, there's some big British actors, in it, including the woman who plays the mom in His Dark Materials. I have not seen her enough to know her name, but she has that very distinctive jawline, so I could spot her immediately. Trish and I had slightly different views on it. Trish had some mixed feelings. I thought it was a very good movie. I enjoyed it. With the caveat that its enjoyment is directly proportional to how much I can forget the source material.
Oh.
And
because it didn't follow it.
Gaiman's an EP on it. And yet still, it's so, the entirety of the short story is one scene in this movie. This movie is largely about well, it's set in 1977 and is very focused on the punk movement. And it is very much about conformity versus freedom and the right to choose and parents letting their children come up with their own independent things and all of this. None of this is in the short story. The short story is largely about the awkwardness and fear and confusion one has as a teenager, juxtaposed with the great cosmic unknown of the universe. And so it's just so, so different. Also, only 2.5 characters in this film, which has a tremendously large cast, actually show up in the short story. So that is very distracting for me. So much of the mythology that was created in the movie was just out of whole cloth. But it is basically, well, the short story is two teenagers end up sort of accidentally at a party and are trying to, you know, hook up with girls, and these girls are a little weird and different in fascinating ways. And then the movie is a whole other thing. It's largely a romance. It has a lot of action, like it's a whole thing. It has very elaborate mythology, and it's just a completely different thing. And as long as I can keep it that way, I think it's a very good movie. But it is rough having read the short story several times. I thought I saw some other movies that, I mean, and I can think of some, but those are ones that aren't worth talking about. I've seen a lot of movies recently that are both not good enough and not bad enough to talk about. If we end up needing to fill time, I want to bitch about one of them, but I don't think we will.
Did I see Avatar: Way of Water since I talked to you last?
Oh, no, you didn't. But it's on Max. Yeah. I heard it's pretty.
It is that. Yeah.
I've heard it's only that.
It's pretty much only that.
Which, yeah. To be fair, so is the first one.
Yeah, right. It tracks, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I have, like, I asked her, I said, hey, Way of Water's on there if you ever want to watch. She's like, nope. And I was like, me too. I was like, maybe. I want to save a caveat. If I'm really high sometime, it might be worth it. And that's not just because Justin McElroy may have told the story about getting really high and going to see it in theater and finding it really awesome because of that fact. But otherwise, I'm like, no, it's 2.5 hours of more white savior bullshit. And I know. No. Thank you. No, thank you. It's available on Max now if you want to see that. And we got at least 2 more coming. And clearly I'm in the minority here because it broke all sorts of new records money wise. So whatever.
Yeah.
We finished 3rd season Mandalorian.
Oh. How did you feel about that?
We may not watch any more, but not for why you think.
Well, I don't know.
It is hugely popular. I am confident it will get more seasons. I don't think anybody's explicated yet, but I'm confident it will. We both felt this makes a real nice series finale.
It did, yeah.
And maybe we don't want to fuck with that. We'll see. I mean, it's going to be at least a year plus before there's even talk out there about it. But I said to Trish, I'm like, I know it'll have more, but this is really coming. She's like, well, maybe we don't have to watch it more. And I was like, maybe we don't, because I am also starting to get a little fatigue kicking. I'm like, all right, we've told a lot of stories about this character. Let's do, except actually this season was less focused on him. But anyway, I'm not going to spoil anything or whatever. It was a good season. I enjoyed it, especially at the end. That happens with the Mandalorian seasons when they're ramping up to sort of the final thing. I enjoy it more often.
Yeah.
I will say this. There is an episode. I believe it is the 3rd to last episode. It is notable by having guest stars of Jack Black and Lizzo, who I've been seeing guest star in a lot of places. Apparently, lady can actually act also. Like, she's just triple threatened all over the place. Quadruple threatened if you count the flute. I mean, everything. And we finished that episode, and I turned to Trish and I said, that was one of the messier, poorlier, like more confusing and conflicting and didn't fit together episodes I've seen of this show. and it's absolutely my favorite episode of the season.
Christopher Lloyd too.
Yes. And it totally turns the show into a different show. It becomes this weird noir detective story thing. And it was full of shit that did not make sense, but I had such a good time. I loved that episode.
Yeah, this season really felt like a comic book to me, but in a good way to me. I liked that about it.
Yeah.
I think maybe some people didn't, but I really did.
I do occasionally feel like the show, and I've noticed this before, and sometimes it applies to me, often it doesn't. The show brings in characters that I happen to know are big deals in other Star Wars shows. And I'll just say this, and no offense to her, she does a remarkable job. Bo-Katan Kreese is not remotely an interesting character in The Mandalorian. But I know she is a very big character in some of the animated series, and I am confident that people who watch those and come into it will project a lot of those things onto her and make it cooler. But near the end of this season, I was like, Bo-Katan, I mean, Katie Sackhoff's doing a great job, but she's not into it. She's very, I don't even want to say archetypical, stereotypical sort of. She's filling a role that many stories have filled before, and she's not bringing anything new to it.
I mean, she voices, Katie Sackhoff voices the character in the animated stuff. So for someone who does know that character and Katie Sackhoff voicing that character, it was pretty exciting to see her in it. I will totally grant you, it was not, you know, you wanted to see more, a better developed character, better developed arc. You did want to see that. And that was a little disappointing. It was so fun to see her though.
She didn't definitely, but it wasn't bad. I wasn't like taken out of it by the character. The character was fine. The character just wasn't that interesting.
No, they could have done a lot better with that, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, that's getting more and more. You get that in MCU stuff too. Which is where Secret Invasion is about to happen, and I fully do not plan to watch it. So I'm basically done with MCU. I want to see the third Guardians. And based on what little information I have, I want to see the Marvels. And I will, shouldn't it have been shown up a long time ago? I will probably watch season two of Loki at such time as that exists. Supposedly that's still happening.
Yeah.
But otherwise, there is not a single MCU property that I'm planning on seeing now. I'm just done. All right. So anyway, but it was good. We enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. So every once in a while, like you have a lot of streaming services. You don't always deep dive into them, especially when they are not as specific as, say, the Disney one, like Netflix. Netflix has every foreign TV show that's been made since like 2010. In any country is on Netflix. Like there's just so many of them, and it's really interesting. But Amazon Prime also, especially with TV shows, it just gets things that it didn't advertise. They're not Amazon originals, but they're things that like nobody really cared about too much, so they got them on the cheap and they're there. And the other day, Amazon recommended one of them to me, and it recommended one of them to me because there was a person on it that I had been watching other things from, and they thought I might. And it's a reality show. You need to prep for that. It is called Last One Laughing Canada, which I haven't looked into this. This either means there have been other shows of Last One Laughing, or they are planning to have others. I don't know. But it is a reality TV show, the premise of which is 10 Canadian comedians are put in a room for 6 hours. They are not allowed to smile or laugh. The last one, and if they do smile or laugh, they are kicked out. And the last one there wins $100,000 for their given charity. And if you are a comedy nerd like I am, I'm not going to say it's entertaining. It's a fascinating experiment. It is the most common phrase I have heard on this show, and I'm almost done with it. I have one more. It's only six half-hour long episodes, so that's good. The most common phrase I've heard is something to the equivalent of, what the fuck is this show? Including from the host. Because just nobody's prepared for this. These are, and I say Canadian comedians. I had heard of all of them except one.
Mm.
But, and you've got, Mae Martin is the reason I knew. Mae Martin is a Canadian comedian who's been living in the UK and who was just recently on series 15 of Taskmaster. And that was the first time I encountered them. And I like them quite a bit. And I've been looking at the stand-up, and they were on this. I think that's why Amazon recommended it. K. Trevor Wilson, who's somebody I like. But it also had names that some of you will recognize here. Caroline Ray, one of the great comedy legends, who a lot of people know as one of the aunts on the original Sabrina the Teenage Witch show, but she's a comedian who's been around forever. Colin Mockery of Whose Line Is It Anyway fame. Dave Foley of the Kids in the Hall. Tom motherfucking Green.
Wow.
John Lajoie, which if you're into internet comedy, you know who that is. Or if you watch The League, it's the dude who played Taco. And other people that apparently are up-and-comers, and I don't know them that well. But and Andrew Fung, who played Kimchi on Kim's Convenience. And, like, nobody knew beforehand who the other people were. And so as they would come in, the younger comedians, like, were losing their minds. They're like, I can't do... Like, literally, people are like... So one of those, like Colin Mockery and Tom Green and Dave Foley, somebody was like, these people taught me what funny is, and I'm here now. And it's just uncomfortable because there is no laughter. It is 10 comedians trying so hard to make people laugh while everyone involved is trying so hard not to laugh. And it's exhausting for them. It's kind of exhausting for me. And like the number of people who get kicked out because they laughed at themselves is, I won't spoil it, but more than it should be. More than none. It's, and just the things that like, and it's constantly interspersed with what I assume was at post show confessional, like shots and things of what was going through the head and all that. And it's fascinating if you are a comedy nerd like me. It's also very hectic. Trish saw the trailer and was like, that seems like a bit much for me. And she's not wrong. But if you are a comedy geek, if you know any of these people, and if you are... Trish and I get very interested in the process of stand-up, not just the stand-up itself. We get into that kind of thing. And it's fascinating. So I would recommend it if you fall into that category. It's so bizarre. You would probably just like it just because it's people being weird and like people doing things that you don't normally see, as long as they're not like gross or vulgar or whatever, tends to be something you like seeing. So, all right, I have to get this out of the way really quick because, we got to get to the big thing. I have turned into a small video game playing child. Twice.
You play small video games?
No. Close. I have turned into a video small game child. In the course of, I'm going to say, 3 days,
mm-hmm.
I watched a YouTube video in which someone played and or talked about a video game. And as soon as I finished the video, I immediately went and bought that game. Twice! In 3 days.
Did you forgot?
You bought no, not the same game. Different games. Sorry. That would be worse. Everyone, yeah. Get your and expectations child might do that. Down. I was not that bad. Sorry. I didn't say I have turned into a small video game playing stupid child. No. Two different games. And then I watched a video and I was tempted to do it a third time and I was like, motherfucker, You don't have this kind of money. Stop it.
Oh, that's funny.
But I haven't regretted the purchase. I've been enjoying both of them quite a bit. And they weren't that expensive. One of them, by coincidence, I could get the, because it's not a recent game, and I got the super deluxe, all the DLC version, which is like $90 for like 20. Because of PlayStation Plus, I got like an 80% discount, so it was really good.
Nice.
And then the other one was just on sale right now, because there's always a sale going on PlayStation. But the games are Tetris Effect, which I have been meaning to get for a long time, which is a Tetris game, but like cool. Like the whole deal is it has weird visualizer effects around. It was actually designed originally to be a VR game. And so it has weird visual effects, and also it has weird, interesting music, and it's interactive music. You moving pieces around adds to the music, plays beats or different things like that, and all of that. And it's all sorts of different music. It's a lot of ambient music, sort of electronic music. Some of it is sort of more world music styles, of also a little bit of improv jazz in there and stuff. But it's meant to just be sort of like a relaxed, chill version. And it has all these different versions. The main game is called Journey, and you go through different levels, and they're all you know, like different themes with different music and different visualizers and stuff like that. And it's very cool. But then that also unlocks other things, and there's other modes, including things like you can play a marathon game where there is no game over. Like if you get to the top, they just all go away and you keep going, or other ones. And it's really fun. And last night I tried doing some of the ones that are like, you know, just play one stage on whatever difficulty you want and there's no game over. And so I just put it on like a really easy stage with some really cool visuals that I liked, and it was just kind of chill. And Tetris is a good game. Tetris is a near perfect game. Tetris is wonderful. There's a reason why knockoffs of Tetris exist everywhere. It's a huge deal. And this is a very cool version of it. I am still not very good at Tetris, but in the less than a week I've had this game, and I haven't played it a ton, but I played it some, I'm already notably better, in my opinion. So it's fun. And then the other one is called Planet Coaster. Your wife would probably like this game. It is a theme park business management system.
Right.
And it's called Planet Coaster in part because you have the ability in the game to build your own roller coasters. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of cool. It's also kind of difficult, and it's completely optional in the process. I got it. There is a sandbox mode that I have yet to use, but I'm going to, and is the main reason to get it, where you can just build whatever kind of theme park you want, run it, and see what happens. I have been going through the career mode, mostly because I feel it is a helpful sort of tutorial. It is teaching me things that I will know how to do later. But I'm just really digging it. I'm having a real fun time. The career mode is largely, here's a park. It sucks in some way. You need to fix it. And I've been doing a lot of those, and sometimes it's a little tricky, and because there's a lot of granularity to it, to a degree that it can almost be intimidating, but they bring you in very slowly in the career mode, which helps. But there's so much of, like, I mean, there's your money, obviously, and prices for everything. Everything costs individually. It's not like an all-inclusive park. So, like, there's an entry fee to the park, although so far I have never charged anyone to go into any of the parks. There's every concession costs a certain amount. Every ride costs a certain amount. How much you pay employees is a factor. Training employees is a thing. Upgrading, like, all the stuff all costs different, and you can adjust. And then where this becomes easier than a real theme park is then you can read the thoughts of customers and employees. And so if the customers are like, wow, this ride is way too fucking expensive, then you know to drop it down. Or like, you know, there's too much litter. Okay, I'm going to hire more janitors, like that kind of thing. And there's different meters to track things. And then you can take out loans if you need to. You need to pay them back. I have just gotten to the part that does like marketing and advertising. And that brings in more customers, but also you pick specific ones and it brings in different types of customers who like different things.
Right.
And I really like it. It's a fun time. So that's been good. But anyway, let's get all that. We got to talk about She-Ra.
Oh, okay.
We also got, and the Princesses of Power. We should also talk about.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about
She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. I have finished the first season. I really like it. I still really, really like it. I kind of binged the end of it because it is very much not self-contained episodes for the most part. Mm. And they like to do that thing of sort of leaving it on like, oh my God, that just happened. So I'm like, I want to see. And for the most part, I could hold up. But when we were in, I'm like, oh, we're heading to something here. I kind of got to push through this. And I did. The representation is much broader than even I realized. We talked about the gender representation and how I believed eventually we get into some queer representation. Well, I was wrong. We've already got lesbians in this. Like, it's not explicit. We don't see them kiss or anything, but they're always a pair and they call each other darling and they hug a lot and shit. I'm like, yeah, no, this is funny. We also have what I finally put together is very clearly a neurodivergent character. And I'm not going to say they don't play that for laughs sometimes, but the character is seen as valuable and unique and interesting and a valid. It's not just a comic relief character. And at first I was like, oh, it's just quirky. And then as it more and more, like sort of the specificity of the character, I'm like, no. This character is possibly autistic, at minimum has ADHD, like, and intentionally, not some bullshit Sheldon Cooper thing, like for real. So I'm just super proud. The way they are handling relationships, it's only been 13 episodes and we've already got dynamism in a lot of relationships in ways that I really enjoy. And I recommend it unreservedly. But I have to talk about this because I have a podcast. I like it so much that the few things I don't like really stand out.
Mm. Interesting.
And again, I think some of this, a lot of this probably, is because I am in zero ways the target demographic for this show.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. But, and this is a problem I've run into before with children's show reboots and or comic book shows, and that is, let us take a very basic, very black and white children's tale and give it nuance and depth, and that sounds wonderful. But it can often come into conflict. Let me try and explain.
Okay.
She-Ra takes place during wartime. She-Ra is a wartime show. Like, there is an active war going on, and there are two mm-hmm. sides. This mm-hmm. is true from the original thing as well, because you have to remember the original series, and I liked it, was a feature-length commercial. Very literally. He-Man, same deal. And so, you got your good guys, you got your bad guys. And it's not even a question. Like, it's not like a, well, from my perspective, the Jedi are evil bullshit. still can't even cope with that one. Hayden Christensen, George Lucas did you wrong. But like, they're bad. And they're always, it's cartoon. It's children's cartoon bad guys. They frequently have like evil in their organizational names. Like, they're all about like doom call. Like, it's all bad. And it's children's things. So we still, it's silly bad. Like, we want to take over the world. But like, nobody dies in G.I. Joe, you know, like Cobra's definitely bad. There's nothing redeemable about Cobra, but they're also not like actually killing people or anything like that. And She-Ra is no different. We have the evil horde run by Hordak, and their base is called the Fright Zone. They are very openly evil. This show is no different. They are very openly evil and want to take over. They are invaders of this planet, and they want to conquer the entire planet and rule it with an iron fist, and they are very upfront about that. There is a plot point, and this is from the original. Our hero, Adora, eventually to be She-Ra, was raised amongst the Horde. And in this version in particular, she sort of didn't get that they were the bad guys. And they do that well, because she's still sort of a trainee. So she's very sheltered in this. And then she figures it out. And I mean, I guess this is the plot of the pilot. She figures out, oh, they're bad. I can't handle this. Whatever. Great. Great. Normal kids cartoon shit. Let's talk about more mature versions of wartime stories. Let's go as hard as I can go, which is World War II. There have been stories, movies, whatever, and actually real life occurrences of people who were on the side of the Nazis, who were not fucked up evil monsters, who had different, like, they didn't really often realize the extent of what was going on, and they really thought, like, you know, my people and my country are doing what is best for the world, and we're gonna make it. It's actually incredibly similar to how the Western world is when we go into other countries and help develop them. Same bullshit. Like, we're gonna bring them democracy and running water and iPhones, and that's a good thing. And there were plenty of Germans, including Germans in the military, who thought that's what was going on. I mean, not as many as other times. It's definitely not a, I don't think anyone this day, other than fucking actual white supremacists, would even in private be like, you know, the Axis were the good guys. Like, no. We all, but like at the time, that makes sense. And I get that. And that's an important thing, because in war, in any sort of reality, there is no good guys and bad guys. And this is a thing to do. It's fine. In She-Ra, we have characters on the side of the bad guys who we are supposed to, if not like, sympathize with, but even to a certain degree like, who are incredibly openly, completely understanding what the goal of the bad guys are, and are super in favor of it, and in fact want to be more involved in decimating this planet if they possibly can. And I have a really hard time knowing that I'm supposed to have sympathy for them, and suspecting in a lot of cases that eventually maybe they'll get redemptive. But like, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You cannot do the, there are people on both sides who think they're doing the right thing, when one side is called the evil Horde and whose stated goal is to bring the world into darkness. Like, you can't do that, and you don't do that in a kid's show, but you do that in a grown-up show, and here is where the two meet, and it does not fucking work. And it's not, we have a character, a major character on the bad guy's side, who is straight up nice, who is nice, who is caring, who makes friends easily, who is concerned about her friends and tries to take care of them and worries about them. And to be honest, is nicer than most of the good guys. And yet is still very openly, very honestly, very clearly and intelligently aware of what the bad guys are doing, and is super on board. No, it doesn't work. And it annoys me. And some of this can be swept aside by saying most of the main characters are teenagers, and teenagers are dumb as shit. And I should, let's do it necessary. Teenagers literally have different neurochemicals going on, and their brains are still forming, and it causes them to think and do things that we would find patently ridiculous. which is an okay excuse to a degree. It's not great, but also brings up, we are trying to have a more serious and grounded story of a planetary war in which almost all of the major military actors are teenagers. Even though we have adults, we don't so much use the adults. We send out the teenagers to lead our armies. Also, bro. So these things, and these are, like, I cannot stress enough, this show is really good. And I highly recommend it. But there is a little tiny ice pick in the base of my skull at all times when this shit is going on. And so it is a thing that pops.
I think it does an interesting job posing, I don't know if they're doing this on purpose, but posing the notion that belonging is more important than belief, that people can, as long as they feel like they belong somewhere, they can tolerate just about any beliefs that are being thrown around or espoused, or even any actions that are taken based on those beliefs. They belong. That's where they fit. And so no matter how terrible this group is, I mean, you get this from former neo-Nazis all the time. It's like, well, why? I didn't really much care about racism or hate or anything. These were just my friends, you know? And I think people do underestimate how important belonging is and how it can overcome things that you think it wouldn't. You think, well, why would you want to be a part of that group? Well, they just want to be a part. And the other stuff just doesn't matter.
As somebody who has never been like that, and I know that I'm unusual, that may be part of the problem. I will say, and maybe this is good, maybe this is bad, I'm refusing to spoil things for this show, but William, who has seen it, you know the primary character I'm talking about when I talk about this problem.
Oh my gosh, so, yeah, one of my favorites.
And I should say, I do believe that sort of need to belong is part of the component. It is also quite clear with regard to this character that need to belong is born 100% out of abuse, out of long-term, serious, not even arguable abuse.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
Maybe that's to its credit. Maybe that's to its credit. Maybe that is the message we're trying to do here, but is also disconcerting there. And I also will say, we are playing with the gray lines of morality with a different character in ways that I think are very realistic and cool, and I like that actually kind of speak to the things. And I don't know, it's a change. It's one of the things that has changed since the story began, and I don't know if it will change back or not, and so I don't want to speculate on that. But so again, love this show. Love the show enough that these little things really bug me. So there it is. I wanted to hop in and do email real fast, but I think we're not going to, which hasn't been the case for a while, but we're almost out of time and I do have to tell a story. And I actually specifically got permission to tell the story.
Okay.
I had to put my foot down and tell my wife she was not allowed to do something.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there.
Right? Right?
A lot of things. Okay, go ahead.
My mind is still reeling from it. It was many days ago. I have told this story repeatedly. I'm still not sure I entirely grasp it. I don't know the best place to start with this. I think I'm just going to have to start with it. Okay. As we all know, I do not wear the pants in this family, literally or figuratively. I also have I am not the breadwinner. I have, other than my penis, I have no argument by which I could make that I would have any authority over my life. And as we all know, a penis is never a very good argument. But it is a classic one in this sort of scenario. Which is why I find it so funny, because it's never applied to us, but I had to do it. So we were watching something and it wasn't that interesting. And so Trish is messing on her tablet or whatever. And afterwards she says, I'm thinking about getting this. And she shows me on the tab. And what she shows me is a enclosed outdoor, like tall. It's like a kitty condo, but it's enclosed and it's meant for outdoors. It's like a little, like if you ever see like a wildlife shed? Cage, it's like that.
Is it gonna...
No, but it's for cats. It's got levels and stuff.
Oh, it's for cats. Oh, I thought it was for her.
Sorry.
She shed.
No.
I love she shed.
No. A kitty condo. You know, kitty. You don't think I'm calling women kitties, do you? What is wrong with you?
Sexist
monster.
I thought you meant kid as in a human child, no. Like a
kitty. Kitty. It is. It basically looks like one of those out wildlife rehabilitation enclosures, but it's probably like 3 feet by 3 feet or whatever. It's a catio, whatever, and it's meant for cats to be able to go outside.
Gotcha.
Now, let me give you her backstory on this. My wife has long been attempting to get Addie comfortable with the outside. All of our cats are indoor. All of our cats have always been indoor. Twiglet used to go out on occasion, and actually, I practiced walking him occasionally, but like none of our cats like get to go out and then they come home someday or whatever. They're indoor cats. And Ezzy's expressed no interest ever in the outside. The outside can fuck right off, which is why I love her to death. Because the outside can fuck right off. And neither has Addie, but Addie would get really upset when he would go to the vet, like more so than most cats. And this made Trish feel bad. And so she's been trying to work on this over the years. And so like she bought a tent that had a lot of mesh on it. And she would put it outside and put him in it with Twiglet. And they would just kind of hang out in the tent and stuff. And it was okay. When Twiglet died, he doesn't like it as much. And she hasn't done it in ages. She hasn't done it this year at all. She also, when we needed a new cat carrier, she got one that doubles as a backpack with like a window thing in it. On the belief that she could take him for walks. She has not done it yet. And as a carrier, it's not that great. And I'm the one who takes the cats to the vet. So I'm not super happy about this, but whatever. And so she wants this because it's another version of this. Sorry, I forgot an important detail. It costs $350.
Eesh. I mean, you know.
And I'm looking at this and I'm just like, $350. And he hates to go, like, he doesn't enjoy, like, the tent is even a problem. Like, she tried to put him in the tent one time, and he lost his shit, and she had to take him back inside because it was too far away from the house. It was having a lot. And I was looking, and my brain's just like, you have to say it. And I'm like, no. That's not how our marriage works. I cannot do that. And my brain was like, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. However, I challenge you to give me one other possible response at all in the world. And then the first part of my brain was like, yeah, you're right. So I just said, after conservatively 10 seconds of pure silence, I just said, no. No, you can't get that. Are you kidding me? I was like, how about we get to the point where in any capacity you can take Addie out at all and he is consistently not upset about it. And then we can start talking about the three. I was like, I already know you don't know where you're going to put it. He's gonna hate it. You're going to put him in it once and it's never going to get used again. And 5 years later, we're going to be, what's this rotting jungle gym in our, oh my God. Do you remember when we spent $350? No, you can't get this. And she said, okay. And I immediately backtracked and was like, if you feel serious about this and want to make a serious argument, we can discuss it. But, and she's like, no, it's, I was like, okay. I didn't think so, but like, come on. And to be fair, if she wanted to buy that with her designated spending money, I think I've talked about the way our finances are. We have a central account and then we each get an allowance and we get to do whatever the fuck we want with that money. That's just our
right.
spending money. And if she wanted to spend but I promise you that is not what her plan was. didn't have $350, but I was just like, it hurt my head. I was seriously like, you can't say that to her. And I was like, cool. Give me any other thing I can say. Any other thing at all. And my brain was like, I mean, shit, it is the only thing I can say.
That's just that position you were in at that moment is just so far from your experience.
Absolutely. And yet, like, you were in- done. It's like I give a shit. Like, it was done out of love for her.
It's no, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that's not a large amount of money for us, but it wouldn't bankrupt us, or it wouldn't, like, we'd have to give up something else for it. And I, why the fuck would I? But, like, I was just like, no, it's not, like, I want her to be a good member of society, and you can't go around thinking that's okay. Like, I seriously just stared at the screen as more gears twirled around in my head at a faster rate than has ever happened in my whole life. Like, I was using 100% of my brain at that moment to try and find a solution out of this that wasn't wildly uncomfortable, and there was only one path forward. And
not today,
you know. Huh?
I was going to say, not today, capitalism. I'm drawing the line right here.
Well, and Trish, and I get this too, but Trish does find herself occasionally susceptible to retail therapy. And I do too. When you're feeling bad, sometimes buying stuff makes you feel better. I get it.
I do it too. Yep.
Often, for me, it's food. And so I buy food. And then because food is also a therapy, whatever. But yeah, her,
it's
clothes is one that she'll do sometimes and stuff. But
she also cares about Gus. And it was a sweet thing for her to think. Maybe
it was. And she had his best will.
Yeah, that was sweet. That was sweet.
And to be fair, like, it wasn't like, she got it. She knew immediately. Like, she was not thrown. I am more bothered by this interaction than she is by a long shot.
Right, because it was like a whole different hat you had to wear than usual.
It was crazy. I have a joke for you, and I'm curious what you'll think. This is this is a real joke that I heard from a professional comedian. I want to make that clear. Oh, and it's an old-timey, silly kind of joke. What's red and invisible?
I don't know.
No tomatoes. Thank you. Thank you. That is the response.
See? No, that is really good.
But you and I are in the minority on this.
Really?
Yes.
I think that's great.
Trish thinks it sucks. Her whole family, because I said, I've got a joke for your dad. So she put it into their family group chat as I was telling it. And apparently she told me the next day, she sent in the setup and they all like said, I don't know what. And then I said the punchline and she typed in, I am so sorry, everybody, before she said the punchline. And then later, one of my sister-in-laws texted me to say she thought it was a good joke, but she said she thought it was a good joke because it's silly, which super doesn't sound patronizing as fuck. I mean, it. And what I think it hits, I cannot explain it, but I think it hits a similar point as a different joke that I also think is hilarious that Trish hates. So are you familiar with the no arms and no legs jokes?
Oh yeah, like
the classic. What do you call
what do you call a person?
No arms and no legs outside your front door. Matt. What do you call a man with no arms and no legs hanging on a wall? Art. What do you call a man with no arms and no legs in a pile of leaves? Russell. Things like this. What do you call a man with no arms and no legs swimming? Bob. What do you call a man with no arms and no legs playing baseball? Third base. I love that joke. Trish does not think it is a joke. Like, it's not even, she doesn't think it worked. I think it hits that same spot as no tomatoes.
Well, now the no,
because it's like, it technically doesn't work, but it does. It's like, I don't know. I don't get
tomatoes.
It.
I mean, it wasn't just, you got to give credit to you for how you told it. I mean, You could tell it wrong, I think. I think you could tell the no tomatoes joke wrong.
What's red and invisible? No tomatoes. Yeah, that's definitely the wrong way to tell it.
I'm just saying.
Are you calling me no tomatoes? Do you think that's my name? What?
I think you delivered it just right. I think it could be done wrong.
It tickles me. And I think there's a linguistic aspect. I mean, obviously. But I think part of the humor to me is it's invisible because there is nothing there. But it's red because it's tomatoes. The absence we're talking about is tomatoes and tomato. So, I mean, you could do it with anything. What's invisible and green? No broccoli. Like anything.
Yeah, right.
What's invisible and looks like William? No William. Like, okay, that one is a little clunky, but you get the idea. So I don't know. I love it. Church just thinks it's terrible.
I think part of what makes it funny is in the way it doesn't. It's true. It doesn't work, but it's the way it doesn't work. It's like,
exactly. And that's the same thing with the third base joke to me. I'm like,
it doesn't
follow the pattern. It is not a pun. It is, however, presenting the idea that there's a guy with no arms and no legs and he wants to be on your baseball team. And you're like, well, I know a place that your unique talents could be put to use. It's over there. For the record, no arms and no legs jokes are terrible. And we did get into a conversation about them the other night at supper with neighbors. And one of the neighbors, because we're telling the kids, and the kids have never heard these jokes, so they're all new to them. And then he says, what do you call a woman with one leg?
Eileen.
Exactly. Now, there's a follow-up joke to that joke.
Well, I don't think I know
that. I'm not going to say it.
Oh, good.
It's very racist.
Oh, well, I don't really think about it.
And so he says, what do you call a woman with one leg? And I was like, careful. And they said, what? And he said, Eileen. And I said, and that's the whole joke. There's no more. And he's like, yep. And he knew. He was like, yep. I was always intending to stop right there.
He knows the other one? I don't know the other one.
Yes, it's. That's I've never heard one told without the other, but I also really? Heard it back in the 80s and we could get away with that bullshit. There are a lot of jokes I was told in school in the 80s that I will not put on the internet, and this is one of them. I'll tell you off the air because I think it's a thing you can talk about in private, but this, as we've established, is the opposite of private, so I'm not going to talk about it here. If you know the second half of that joke, keep it to your fucking self. I'm even going to do it. Azure Talon, do not put that joke in the comments. I will edit and delete that motherfucker. Do not bring that shit here. But if you want to bring other shit here, feel free. Go to the blog, to magicthetalkinghat.com, and tell us what you think of Red Invisible. It's a good joke. But tell us if you understand that or if you're broken. Feelings on She-Ra. I hope most people have watched She-Ra. I'm very late to the party, I know, but I'm really enjoying it. I mean, anything else? We talked about a bunch. I talked about a bunch of shit. Tell me your feelings on it. I think there's a lot of Neil Gaiman fans out there. How are we feeling about the trailer for season 2 of Good Omens?
I didn't even watch the whole first season.
Really?
Yeah, I can't, not for any particular reason. I think something came up and then we just, you know, we see it every once in a while and we go, oh yeah, we stopped watching that. I don't think
it wasn't particularly well
or something.
I enjoyed it. I was really upset. Well, I shouldn't say upset. I was really fucking, I don't think a second season should exist.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Because the first season encompassed the entirety of the source material. And I get Gaiman is heavily involved in showrunning, and that's probably good and whatever. But I don't think it is. That being said, I saw the trailer, and it's just more madcap fun of the similar vein, and also very clearly playing on some shipping that occurred with the first season that is not in the source material that I'm super here for. So I'm pretty excited about it. If it has to exist, this looks like a good one.
Maybe this is Gaiman's way of saying, I liked this world and these characters, and I didn't do anything else with them, and I'd like to. And this is a good medium to do it.
This is his way of saying Pratchett was holding me back, and now I can do what fucking I want.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is interesting in How to Talk to Girls About Parties. It's one of the many short stories that Neil Gaiman has written that are ostensibly true stories about him.
Mm.
He's written a lot of these, and this is him as a teenager. This supposedly happened to him, and the main character is clearly supposed to be him. And I find it interesting because the main character is named N, like the letter N, which is from the book N for Neil. In this movie, it's N short for Henry, and I'm like, why did they change that? That's weird, but whatever. By the end of it, we do sort of an epilogue thing, and he's dressed exactly the way that Neil Gaiman dressed like all the time. Like it's kind of funny how obvious that one is, but anyway, yeah. So tell us what you feel about any of this stuff. Leave comments on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. Leave comments on YouTube. Please write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. I know we didn't do one today, but I'm working on doing them most of the time, and we're pretty low, so we could always use more. Listen again next week. And just to reiterate, I said it on there, but Maggie, congratulations on your milestone. I am very impressed with you and proud of you for what you are pulling off. And William would be too, but he can't bother to read YouTube, so he doesn't know what we're talking about.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.